في هذا اللقاء نستضيف أحد أبرز قادة وخبراء القطاع من جميع أنحاء العالم للتحدث عن القيادة في عالم إدارة المرافق ومشاركة الدروس المستفادة من خبراتهم ومناقشة المواضيع ذات الصلة بالقطاع. سيلهم هذا اللقاء المهني من قطاع إدارة المرافق من خلال منحهم عوامل رئيسية للنجاح والنمو وإنشاء منصة لتبادل المعرفة والخبرة داخل القطاع. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We are back again with another Leaders Talk episode with one of the leaders in the industry, not just leading the organization, also aiming to lead the industry by educating clients, creating awareness. We have with us Mr. Tariq Shohan in this session. Thank you, Mr. Tariq, for joining us. Thank you very much.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Thank you for inviting me for this prestigious event.
Thank you. Again, just to remind the audience, this is a program for you, and we're trying to share experience and guide FM professionals in the industry in how to grow, how to get through the different stages that they're going to go. We're talking to leaders who have many, many years of experience, and through these interviews that are available in the YouTube channel of NEFMA and the podcast, you can always refer to them. And in similar situation, you got the leader's advice for you to act in a better way. And inshallah, this is again sharing knowledge, knowledge transfer. It's not easy to be a leader, I have to say. It's a lot of effort, a lot of time spent in the field with your team. But yeah, when you become a leader, you're not going to be proud of yourself. Your people will be proud of you. And this is the ultimate joy, that people are happy to work for you and with you. And that is very important. So I think we're going to start the leader's talk in maybe one more minutes. But again, thank you, Mr. Tariq. We'll have a special introduction, of course, learning about your background and experience, but we'll give it another 1 minute. I think during this 1 minute, I have to tell everybody, NEFMA is there for you. You can reach us anytime. We would like to help the industry and the help people within the industry, support them, guide them. We have a lot of programs. Our recent or latest program that's going to be launched in Saudi Arabia, our NEFMA Confix, which is an exhibition and a conference over 3 days and workshops. And hopefully we can also do site visits. And normally in our NEFMA Confix, we get people coming from all around Middle East and worldwide to interact and look at the industry and showcase case studies. So inshallah, we look forward for your participation in our NEFMA Confix. This year is going to be in Riyadh on 14th and 15th of October. So I think it's time to start this session. Thank you again for joining us, guys, in this leader's talk. And inshallah, you're going to have it again in the YouTube and the podcast for everybody to refer to it. To start, we would like to ask our leaders today to talk about himself, background, and how did he start his career in facility management. Mr. Tariq, okay. We'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, so I had, I must say, a fairly long journey when it comes to, I had almost pursued 5 different careers as a part of my bigger professional career. I started as a industrial engineer, although I never went to an engineering college. I was a student of political science, economics, and history. But in pursuit of doing something impactful was always part of my initial objective. And that remained my objective till whatever I do in my life is creating something impactful. So I actually started working for an American company in India in the industrial coating business. And I was actually helping companies to sell products, you know, which are primarily to help on heat reduction, heat insulation, and many other elements. And then in about 2 years' time, my father realized that I was always on the move. He wanted me to pursue a lot more white-collar job, and then I got into banking. So I started working for a global bank, and I worked in banking for about 14 years. I started with in the customer services, then in treasury, and then I did corporate banking, and then finally landed up as a treasurer in a bank. Wow. And then again, in that pursuit of impact, I realized that I have accomplished sufficient, and now I need to make the change in the world. So then I came to Dubai, and I established a financial services company, which was primarily in investment banking, that included merger acquisitions and others. I did a leverage buyout. In just 1 year, I realized that my principals were not able to help me to accomplish my goals. Then I went on to do a leverage buyout in 1997. Wow. And then went on to establish that as one of the premier players in the investment banking field. Then in 1999, as a part of my continuous, interest in pursuit and wanting to make a difference to the industry that I was working for, I realized that I had to do something a little bit more innovative there. So in partnership with another company, I got into investment, into transaction services. And then this journey never finished till 2008, when the world was faced with the financial crisis. During this journey, I had fairly many ups and downs, to the extent that in 2008, I was wondering, what do I do in my life? Having faced with a significant debt, with significant challenges on the business continuity itself, I then was offered, because of my management experience in the past, because my ability to build businesses from scratch, there were investors, there were shareholders of the existing company were looking for a businessman to start building a facility management company. I had a brief incident with the facility management because I was representing one of the globally well-known softwares that I was implementing in some large corporates in the region that helped me to give my insights into facility management. However, my initial journey with facility management with a company with just 20, 30 million in revenues, which was with four or five services. And that's how in 2009, I started my journey with facility management.
Amazing, amazing journey. You took us all back to banking and American Coating Company. I think it's amazing. So you started really leading an FM company directly. So you did not grow in the FM as a ladder, but you have done more experience in different industry, of course, especially banking. So that is important for FM.
Why I was offered, because being an entrepreneur, having taken risk in my life, having been through multiple businesses. So I worked in five different industries, starting with banking, then transaction services, then investment banking, and then in technology. And then when I was moving from technology to the facility management, by then I had sufficient insights of what is critical to succeed in context to building a global business. And I was always, this was an unfinished agenda for me over the last five businesses. So being a serial entrepreneur, this was my last and the place where I found myself, where I felt I belonged to. Because I'm a student of political science, but basically all my life I pursued common sense and logic. And I applied common sense and logic when it came to effort.
I agree. Common sense and logic is a must, because without that, you will not really understand what clients need. So you are a CEO of EFS since 2009.
EFS was not what it is today. It was then a joint venture with an American company. They were operating in three or four countries with a small contract backlog. They were primarily delivering hard services. My journey started with reestablishing EFS into a different brand, bringing new shareholders into the format, and then building a fully integrated capability with adding on the workplace solutions I then went on to, you know, build a company from a scratch. And I realized that if I have to deliver services, I need to have a self-delivery capability across the critical services. Second was to build a regional supply chain so that I was able to provide a single window clearance, a single window services to global multinationals. I also went on then to build shared services platform because post 2009, the industry had to recalibrate both in context to lean and agile operations. Also, it had to offer the value proposition to the clients in terms of single window service propositioning. And this is exactly what I did, is added on three new verticals in the business: banking, workplace solutions, oil and gas. And that way I was able to, you know, attract global multinationals, those who could deal with a company with ability to deliver across the region with a single compliance and, you know, governance, and being able to do a centralized contract management.
Very good. I think this is not an easy task, because you're not trying just to do something in one country. You're trying to do the same thing, the same quality across. And for the people who may be not familiar with the with workplace solutions, it's more focusing on multinational company who have multi offices across the world. Mr. Tarek,
I would like to, sorry for the interruption, but I would like to tell you three most important things I did when building the company. Yeah. One was a global knowledge that was critical to FM, and every client was looking for a global knowledge and a knowledge transfer. Second was a regional presence. I went on to build companies around, currently, mashallah, we have 24 countries now, but right at the very initial stages, I was able to expand the operations to 11 countries. Okay. And then the local presence. What was very critical, and there was a definitive trust deficit in context to the global companies, because local clients were wanting to have the local experience. Whilst they were very keen to have the global knowledge, but they also wanted to make sure that they understand the local dynamics, the sensitivities around, you know, whether it is the nationalization of the local workforce, or for that matter, the integration with the local laws. We had sufficient global best practices, but integrating them with the local compliances, also ensuring the understanding, the how do you, you know, mobilizations, deployment in very short period of time, and then the ability to create tactical, you know, interfaces between smooth mobilization. Because if we go by the global international practices, there is a naturalized time. But in Middle Eastern environments, the environments were very different. You had to mobilize possibly 2,000 to 3,000 workforce within a period of 60 days. It is definitely unheard. And if you go by the global practices, these are definitely great global practices. But we need to build the local interfaces. We need to do some level of orientation. And that's exactly what I was able to do, is to be able to provide a timely access to people. Another important thing which I built on is the people's organization. I realized facility management, two-thirds of our cost is sitting on people's cost. If you look at how we price the services and how we deliver our services, I'm sure at some stage technology will overtake it and things would change. But as of today, you know, barring the OEM services or the specialized services, our 75 to 80% cost is still sitting on people's cost.
Yes, yes, I agree.
I had to master the art of people first organization, where you build discipline, attitude, commitment, passion, procession, people. These were all very, very essential elements. And the organization was primarily built on the fundamentals of the people first principles. And that helped me to create a team, having accomplished 97% contract retention over the last 17 years, having built a 2 billion organization from few million in backlog then. I'm sure this has been made possible primarily because of a great team. I was able to do that. And I kept tweaking this element. And it's It's never a finished agenda. When it comes to people, you require a continuous engagement. You require a perpetual innovation, how to engage, motivate people. And that has been, and indeed, one of the great successes I had in my journey to build a company that I can say with confidence, it is indeed a people first company.
Amazing. I like this. I like it. People first organization is an important element of any organization success. We are getting questions. While you are talking, let's answer some questions. So this question is, how has EFS local body association or partnership help them to improve business while sustaining profitability?
I want to once again revisit the question.
Yeah.
The local bodies, are they referring to MEFMA and other institutions that has helped me to...
No, I think it's partnership. Partnership. He's talking about local formation of EFS, bringing partners together. Did it help to improve business while sustaining profitability?
Yeah.
Because sometimes partners don't understand.
Yeah. So I think it is very important. First of all, you should have... There are four stakeholders in the business.
Yeah.
For me, employees, clients, suppliers, and shareholders. When it comes to shareholders, you need to create a shared vision.
Yes.
And to create a shared vision, you need to have people with right values, right long-term goals. If there is a goal disalignment between shareholders and management, or for that matter, individual shareholders have their own individual agendas.
Yes.
What I carefully did, that I did not go with developers as partners. I went with businessmen who have built very successful businesses in the region. So today, EFS is proud to have 12 shareholders, and all the 12 shareholders are one of the finest business families in the region. However, at no stage, any of my partners did not interfere by imposing their related party assets on me or pushing me to do business in that format. So all the shareholders got together with a very clear agenda to build a sustainable enterprise, which is built on pure competence, where merits disregarded everything else. Merits was everything. So merits overtake on everything, be it management performance, be it about company's bottom line. The organization built prudent is a very essential element and a character of my organization. Risk is a very essential character of my organization. These are the things that shareholders connect with. Diversity, ensuring if I have to build a sustainable organization, diversity was very critical for me. That's how I did not leave one region, or for that matter, one country to lead my business. Today, indeed, Saudi Arabia is very impressive for us, and definitely the way we are, you know, going leaps and bounds in Saudi Arabia. However, I'm equally careful that I should not leave my other regions behind. And I need to innovate myself to find sufficient growth opportunities in those countries. So diversity is a very essential element. And how do you keep your shareholders together? That's how I was able to bind the empowerment that is given to me by my shareholders, because I was able to establish a defined path and a definitive journey for them. It took me some years for me to earn their unequivocal support that I have today. I had to earn that, and I had to walk my talk in order to earn that position. And fortunately today, these partnerships have helped me with my shareholders. I have a partnership with my shareholders. I have a partnership with my clients. I have a partnership with my employees. And each of that partnership has very essential elements. The first most important thing is the value embodiment. You build a transparent business above board with governance, compliance, with, you know, a risk-averse model. I'm sure it's easy to connect people and bring people to agree with your agenda.
Yes.
So I was very careful in navigating my agenda along with my stakeholder.
Well said. I have to say, partnership is the right word to be successful in FM. We will ask more leaders question, but this question I want to ask because I think this person is asking the question in trouble. He needs guidance from us. What she or he is asking during your journey, you have definitely met with the toxic client who are not really easy. You know, give us your insight about dealing with them. And when and what make the decision of a termination is a must. So when you have a client who really don't see the value, who's toxic, how can you manage him? That's the question. Okay.
So I am fortunate to be, over the last 17 years, I'm claiming that I'm not claiming as a fact that I have a 97% contract retention. So definitely there is an art of retention. However, I was very, very clear right from the beginning. You pick and choose your own friends. You choose your own family. Family, you don't necessarily pick.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct? But
yeah.
If you have a value embodiment, you pick and choose right kind of clients. I had very rare one or two small occasions where I had to walk out of a relationship. For me, the fundamental in the relationship is the mutual respect. It is the first most fundamental.
Yes.
It is not the commercials alone. There has been situation where I had to go through a difficult, some element of financial aberration was there. But I always believe if you have the right, if there is a mutual respect, if you have a spirit of partnership, you can always prevail and turn around situations. However, if there is where does the toxic relationship come from? First most for me is the respect for my team that is delivering services. I cannot turn around a contract if the fundamental basic respect is missing between my team and the client. Second is understanding of the business. However, this can be easily taken care of at the bid level, bid and no bid. When I look at the bid or no bid, I take into a 360 degree understanding and insight of where I want to bid and why I should bid this and why I should not bid this. So primarily at that stage, because of my own insights, I'm fairly careful and I'm very successful in that front. However, if it is due to a change in the client organization, a new client representative have come in and suddenly you realize that there is a definitive disalignment on the basics. I would say time to say, you know, shake hands, find an exit if you can. What we call it is an honorable exit.
Yes.
Well, I would not expect you to just walk out of it because you have a responsibility to your organization. As a part of governance and compliance and risk, you need to be diligent in your exit strategy as well. Never ever walk out of a client without an honorable exit. So seek an honorable exit. But yes, it is important. If you see, I want to tell you something on a very lighter note. I often say, don't mind dealing with a crooked person, but I won't deal with the idiot. And unfortunately, we do reach such situations where there is a significant amount of, disconnect on the basics of it. And I am a strong believer to protect my organizational reputation,
yes.
Protect my people in the organization. Their morale is very important for me.
Yes,
and then ultimately the bottom line. But
yes.
I first go about the organizational reputation. Then I look at the my own people's motivation levels. And third, I look at the bottom line. These are the three criteria based on which I look to if there has been a situation. I had very fever situations. And one more thing I would like to tell this person who has asked this question. And a topic which is close to my heart is a restitution.
Yeah.
and service recovery. In business, especially in a service industry, we all have situations where we have some aberrations and things get difficult. And it comes to a stage where you are often even asked to, given a very short notice to exit. I had situations, more than three such situations in my life, where with very large clients, I was almost given a very short notice and I turned around the situations. And these have been one of my biggest learnings in life. So if today it's not a smooth mobilization and a client is happy, that is not what my biggest success in life. Yeah. When it comes to my journey of facility management, it is those restitutions where yes. I had to go through a very, very tough, you know, initial debacle and then self-reflecting on the challenges, that the mistakes that we did, work through the team in a collaborative manner and ultimately rising up to turn around the situation. And those are some of the finest relationships today we have. We are celebrating almost 15, 17 years of some of our relationships. And that is primarily those where we had such situations at some stage.
Amazing, Mr. Tariq. I think you've answered the question and I'm sure she got the, you know, the right guidance for her to handle such a toxic clients. And inshallah, we work and do our best to educate the clients. Again, our failure is a client failure. The clients sometimes blame the service provider and don't understand that if he fails, he will not fail if he doesn't have the right partner. And this is what we say.
Abdul, Ali, I know yes. I'm sometimes digress, but it's very important for me to give you a reference to context.
Yes, please.
The problem is that we often become a part of a bigger problem that we don't know till such time we get into the contract. So initially, when you do the conditions, when you do the site surveys, you have a very limited information on the site, very limited data given to you, and then you ultimately enter the project. Now, once you enter the project, you do a condition survey, which is a normal thing.
Yeah.
In our as far as I know, 90% of condition surveys don't see light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
They are usually left or with very limited element of, you know, validation by the client, and you continue to manage those dilapidated assets, or for that yes. matter, underperforming
for sure.
assets. And then your service delivery was based on a performing asset with yeah. with everything being right. And then you have to maintain these assets. So the point, what I'm trying to explain here is that in facility management, there are multiple challenges that we face. One is the building cost itself, for whatever reasons, have gone beyond normal benchmarks. And that becomes your lifetime problem, because a man in the finance and procurement is only looking at the global benchmark. And then he's not realizing the asset is underperforming, is low quality. The facility management company has to manage an asset like this. You are definitely, you know, priced it with based on global best practices. You've priced it based on. Now you say conditional assessment. I wish conditional assessments could be, you know, in a true sense can be implemented in this part, not only in this part of the world. Very often people talk about other countries. I can assure you, sir, I operate in 23 countries and I am in five different regions. I am also working with some of the globally acclaimed companies. The problems of the current facility management are not only the issue of the region. They are a global problem.
I agree 100%.
These are global problems. And there is a huge underspend that is impacting our industry. That doesn't mean that I'm discouraging the youngsters. They don't come to this industry. Because when you have such problems, this is also a place, an ultimate, you know, playground to learn new things and innovate and transform. But that's the true fact of FM. The FM underspend is a global problem. And that is where, and imagine we have to innovate and transform in the backdrop of this challenge.
I agree. I cannot say more. And I see the questions that are flowing are more related to dealing with the client, dealing with client who doesn't pay. But we want to focus on the leadership because this is the session is all about. And I think what you gave an example, it's really a true reflection of leadership. So now my question to you about lesson guidelines that you can share with our attendee that we consider as a learning experience throughout your career. What are the lesson and guidelines that you can share with them? I'm sure you've answered this question already, but you can.
First of all, I was born and brought up with great values where they helped me to make me aware of a continuous pursuit in life. So I always talk about self-reflection. It's a very important thing in life to continuously review where you stand. What is that you need to accomplish in life? What are your goals? What are your personal goals? What are your professional goals? What is that you want to accomplish in life in context to material aspects? What you want to accomplish to the self-actualization aspects? So hard work, perseverance, relentless actions, acquisition of knowledge. When I talk about precision, passion, precision, and people, these are the fundamental three ethos that works very well in facility management.
What are they again? Passion,
precision, and people. People is about, you know, collaborative. You know, people elements are, there are hundreds of values that are critical to service industry, that are critical to this. But when we talk about precision, I'm talking about knowledge, practice, and experience.
Yes.
No knowledge is good enough. So you may have gone to the to the best of the school, but you need to continuously practice that learning through a perpetual and continuous learning. And that is where you look at it. So for me, precision is about practice, knowledge, and experience. That's what it makes you a precise.
Yes.
The word precision is how you're able to, you know, hit right on the target. So precision is a fundamental ethos for me, it has been. Coming to personal level, discipline, attitude, and commitment. Discipline is very, very critical and essential in life. It is, if I have to attribute to a little bit of whatever I am able to accomplish to make a difference to people's life, is primarily because I'm able to follow a very strict, and there cannot be, is the discipline is not an element where you can have a zero tolerance. But I'm very, very clear that the discipline needs to be followed. It has to be there. Attitude, being collaborative, being positive, being, able to. So over the years in my life, I have always risen against negativity.
Yes.
I have always risen above, not against. There is a difference when you word it against and above. Sometimes above is a more confrontative approach. Against is a confrontative approach. Above is something where you ignore it and you look to see life on a better aspect of it. Optimism is a part of positivity. So according to me, attitude, discipline, attitude, commitment. Commitment comes from your values. If you are being, you know, you need to commit to your own set of goals and ideas in life, to your own responsibilities. So I think for me, I'm sure some of you who might have the opportunity to read my book, I have actually very clearly outlined every aspect. And this is not an autobiography, but it is more of a business book for everyone to connect to. And out there, I have very clearly elaborated why discipline matters, Why commitment, passion, procession? This morning, I was talking to my team, launching a new people first organization, HR portal in the organization. And there was some balloons, and they left the balloons tied up. I said, balloons belong to where? To the sky. They must be flying. Passion is something which is not to be, you know, harnessed inside you. It has to be, you know, you have to empower your passion with your actions and with a desired action.
Yes.
So what my objective is, relentlessness is a very essential element. You have to have a loftiness of vision to be accomplishing in life. And that's how I have followed this. It has been perpetual in my life. There has always been the pursuit of an impact in my life. And that has helped me to accomplish the goals where I felt that I was able to connect to people and accomplish results in a very relative manner to each person.
Amazing. I think you have given enough guidelines for the people to really create this self-energy that they don't stop learning, they don't stop becoming passionate. And I think the most important is helping people around you, because when you help people around you, you are also going to grow and learn. So it's not me alone, me with the team. Team is my boss and my employees. So how can I integrate and become a true leader in my own domain rather than comparing myself to other people? Amazing insight. One guy is asking, what is the book of your, what is the name of your book? So I think it will be very soon in Amazon.
Yeah, right? The name of the book is Getting to Resilient Mode. It is available on Amazon. It is, till yesterday, it was Amazon bestseller number one book.
MashaAllah.
So I would recommend everyone to read it, because it's not about my book, because the proceeds of the book will go to worker welfare. That's nice. A very important element. And that's something that I personally believe every person who have accomplished something have a responsibility to give it, to give back to others. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed has done one of the, you know, even Abu Dhabi rulers and everyone has, you know, talked about this. They have really some path-breaking decisions and initiatives with which they have taken. We, as individuals out here, have our own social responsibility at individual level. And I believe every individual in the organization or wherever he is has a social responsibility of his own. And then as an organization, you come along with some additional corporate responsibilities, corporate social responsibility. At EFS, it is an integral part of my people first approach. Compassion, not empathy, but compassion. And compassion is an essential element to empower it helps in your value embodiment. Second, it also helps to create a trust with others. If you want to bring your employees and you help to embolden that trust with them, your ability to demonstrate in walking your talk for beliefs that you believe in, and that brings a direct impact to others, not to yourself. How do you rise from self to create holistic value for others? And that's exactly what I have talked about.
We look forward. I'm excited to get my copy, and I am happy to contribute in the CSR component as well. This is an amazing idea. We have, again, a lot of questions, but please, these questions, we can do it. Ask Mr. Tariq Shohan directly. This is, again, we are
interviewing.
Yeah, this is more of leader stuff. We want to talk about the leadership quality, and Mr. Tariq, amazing insight you have given to us. My next question is, you know, is about a newcomer to the industry. How can they grow in their career and responsibility? What does it take them to do that?
Okay, so I think the first most important thing is realignment of the basic fundamentals in life. We talked about hard work, perseverance. All these are very essential qualities.
Yeah.
Important thing is that identify your long-term and your long-term
short
goal,
term.
And then align your capabilities and ensure to recalibrate your capabilities based on your short, medium, and long-term goals. Have clear milestones. You can't accomplish a goal without a milestone.
Yes.
So short, medium, and long-term, professional, personal, professional, functional. So very simple things in life is rework back on your personal goals, professional goals, and functional goals. Functional means career, basically. Professional does not mean if you have done a degree today, in a world we live today, you need continuous, you know, enrichment of your knowledge through different kind of certifications, different kind of additional courses, which are very critical. So don't just leave it to on work learning, which is very essential and critical. And I don't dispute that part of it. Then on personal, we continuously have to, personal health is a very important. How many of us consider health well-being is a very important part of your long-term, your short, medium, and long-term goals? If you don't have a right health, you do not have the alignment with the fundamental basic well-being concepts of it. It is very, very critical and essential. Then working on your self-development. We all are born and brought up with different kind of influences. We every year, it should not be just a new year resolution. Oh, I'm going to change. No, it has to be a perpetual quest in you to make a difference, to transform. I personally believe personal goals, professional goals, and functional, and the functional and the career, they have three or four stages. There is an early stage of learning where you just get into the job, where you can put a lot more extra time and efforts in order to make the second phase simpler and easier. Because that is where you possibly go get married, you have children, so you can work, do a right work-life balance. And then identify the career that that complements your short-term, long-term, and professional goals. Do not get into a career just for the sake of another job. It has to be something. One thing, I'm here today because I was never in a wrong job. I always love my job. And
yes,
imagine if you love your job and it also... So with love and money coming along with that love, what best could be? Because if you love your job, be rest assured in life. You are secured. Money will just flow in.
But I agree.
The important thing is you love your job and sustain it. So sustaining a job is also another. Just finding a job is not enough alone. How to find happiness in that job? How to... you know, go, you know, leaps and bounds in that job.
Yes. Mr. Tariq, we have amazing questions, but I know the guy, this guy is an expert. He's asking the question that he can answer, but I think it's good to share the question with the audience. Great audience.
I would love to hear from him. Yeah, please.
I'm not going to say his name. Maybe later on I can tell you his name.
But sure.
The question is, where does experience come in?
Where does experience come in? Comes
in. You already answered it.
But let me explain to you. The experience is your, what I call it is that in your life, you have a lot of churning around. Your highs, lows, successes, failures, that ultimately makes you, and when a combination of all this eventually helps you to takes you to a place where you feel that you have accomplished your, you've started accomplishing your goals. And that is what an experience. So every bad or good experience ultimately leads to make you a better professional. And what is called a better professional? Your ability to manage people more effectively, your ability to deliver results, your farsights and foresights, Where does your farsights and foresights come? That doesn't come from being born with that. Your farsights and foresights come from your churning in life, where you have gone through, and that is one of the reasons. It is not only the failures that teach you things. It is also some successes that teaches you things. What has worked, what has not. So for me, experience comes from your exposure, from your perpetual, your relentlessness in you to be able to do things, engage people, evaluate your actions. That's also helps you in the experience. That's why I continuously keep talking about self-reflection. I keep talking about introspection. So I often tell people that when I meet somebody like in my organization, I first start with the recognition of what that person has accomplished. Correct? So, and I acknowledge that accomplishment of him or her by rewarding, by acknowledging it, that becomes a reward. Now, once you do that, you help the person to introspect how he could do things better. And when you do introspection, then you identify that you need to you define the gap analysis. Okay, in this introspection, I realize there are some transformations I need to make. And that is where learning and development comes and measure of success. Do people actually evaluate their measure of success? By doing things does not become a measure of success. By introspecting it, evaluating the data and defining it, a definitive plan of action is called measure of success. And this is how I engage with most people in my organization. Most of the people, those who have worked with me, will tell you that they very well resonate. These are the words. These are the sort of actions. This is how I plan my engagement with them. And this is how I carve their long-term journey. That's how.
Amazing. I think you answered all the questions without even reading the questions for you, because somebody talked about internal career path growth for middle managers, which is a crucial in any organization. I think you answered that question because the role of middle management is important for us as leaders, right? So making them grow in the organization is an important element. Retaining them is an important element.
I think, Mr. Ali, I'll tell you one thing. Progression and development is an integral part of any organization. And if they do not have the progression, they need to seriously introspect something is not right in that organization.
Yes.
And introspection, an average organization must accomplish 15 to 20% progression. Okay. Should they maintain a reasonable growth of 5 to 10%, an organization must accomplish 10 to 15% progression across all levels. Progression is a essential, as much you make profit, is equally important to have progression in the organization. And organizations that do not have progression have to definitely introspect something is not right for the long term. Even if they have accomplished profits, they will not be able to sustain those profits, because employee retention and motivation is dependent on progression. You just can't accomplish results without career progression is an essential need for every professional. If they do not accomplish that, they simply live on yearly increments coming from inflation and other related adjustment is not the right thing. They expect to have a definitive promotion, ability to have multifaceted role, exposure. These are all very important.
I agree 100%. I had my last question, but I think one person is asking similar questions. I'm going to read his question because it's the same. My question was leadership quality you need in your FM team. His question is, what is the criteria to recruit FM manager in your organization and others in the Gulf? What are the criteria?
So I'll tell you one thing. Cultural fit is a very important and critical criteria in EFS. because
Very important.
proud to be an EFSian, we call ourselves proud to be an EFSian.
Yeah.
And there is a nine, the word EFSian each represents an element which is critical to our business. However, we first start with the qualification, then we look at the experience, relevant experience. When we talk about, then we look at the personal profile, is the personal profile. When we look at the experience, we look at relevant experience in similar environments. Third is the person's ability to take risks, because we personally believe that risk taking capability is a critical part in a business like FM. So emotional intelligence, critical thinking, these are all very essential elements when we look at the personal attributes of the person. Today, we do not hire a person unless there is a psychometric analysis. However, the psychometric analysis is not based on global models. We have created our own psychometric, and based on that, we do the assessment of the person. At the same time, we definitely look at some of the behavioral attributes of the person when he meets us. How is he pursuing that opportunity? Is he looking for a change just for the sake of another career uplift, or is he looking for with a definitive, agenda for his own transformation? So we definitely have multiple ways to look at hiring a person. But one thing very, very important is, being an agile and lean organization, we definitely we pay people well, but we pay to the extent that what the current market dynamics are and the project dynamics.
But I'm sure you need somebody who will never give up. We need somebody with what's your culture? You need somebody who manage customer, who understand customer need.
So I'll tell you, some people might find me very out of date. So when a father is looking for a bride for his son, he's very careful what kind of bride I need to, which can keep the family together, which can ensure to, create a right kind of chemistry between the various people within the family. She's able to support the long-term objectives for my son. She complements well with his character and with his... So I see the same way when I hire managers in my organization. This is one of the reasons I said to you, the cultural fit is a very critical, important requirement of mine. And when I look for very ambitious people who are wanting to accomplish things in a quick manner, I am a little bit careful. And I ensure that if there is a naturalized period of progression for everyone, they should go through that. And being a student of earning all my life, I have never demanded anything in my life. I have always earned.
Yes.
So I like people to earn.
Exactly. I agree. Versus demanding. That's a nice one for the young people. Don't demand, earn. Please, don't ask for something, earn it. Your boss will see that. Amazing. We have just a few minutes. I'm going to take advantage of these few minutes. I think leadership, we have an amazing insight of leadership and how can you grow yourself. But, let's talk about the industry in the last 5 minutes. We are looking at the banking industry. There is technology transformation. Now we can do everything through online, using technology. Now the automobile industry also is transforming with the electric car. For us as an FMR, when are we going to be transformed?
I think I have to tell you that I'm a person with a lot of pain when it comes to the state of the facility management industry globally.
Yes.
So I started my initial discussion with you about the significant FM underspend. So the way the structure of the facility management has changed over the last many years, that more freighters in real estate, they don't own the real estate. They're looking for improving returns. And when they look to improve return, they want to cut cost. And cutting cost, FM is the first one that is in the project. So this FM underspend is a significant challenge. However, technology is a definitely great enabler, but it is not going to transform the industry till such time the global institutions, governments, institutions come in with a very strong, you know, guidelines, governance, some level of on a minimum required FM benchmark spending on the FM. This is critical. If people move away from intrinsic cost and they continue to keep reducing cost, which is becoming dangerous.
Yes.
We will have much more dilapidated buildings. Globally, I have seen almost 40 to 30% reduction in the fundamental basic cost of FM. Now, is that coming due to the pressure of overspend in other areas? Yes, if energy management costs are going up, it is not alone FM responsibility. These are because the supply chain, people have to be blamed for it. They went and procured low quality assets. And yes, today this should stop. The supply chain must not be given to, you know, reduce costs that ultimately impact the long-term facility management cost. That will impact the long-term facility management industry. So I think this is very important. However, on technology, also has to change. We are sitting with a very poor level of technology in FM. We are talking about AI. We are talking about robotics. We need to first protect the data. When we have such bad quality of data, what the technology will do? And how do you transform data between construction, commissioning, maintenance? At every second level, the moment you move from construction to commissioning, you have a different data. By the time from the commissioning, you have once again, somebody else is creating a data. There is no data integration. There's no proper, if you look at the way the entire information architecture issue, database design issues. No, do you know that globally, not one single CAFM company can claim that of the global 500 companies, I have in that more than 5 or 10 clients out on every 15 or maybe 20, not even 50, you will have one common company in that. One of the largest global companies don't have their own, and everybody is looking to control their assets without understanding. You need a significant change in the financial systems.
Yes.
Do you know the CapEx, OpEx spend? There is no clear data available to most of our, when we do the baseline budgets.
Yes.
And we struggle to find in the financial systems where to find that information. So I think the important thing for the FM and the way it will transform has got multiple things have to happen. One, of course, is the technology. We need a new technology. We need a technology which is able to capture the data after the post-completation, and then the commissioning data and the maintenance data should have an automatic, seamless integration so that we have a true. Secondly, facility management is not only about asset management. Why are we overly, you know, concerned only about asset management, task management, performance management? There's so much information that we have almost today, EFS, we deliver almost 75 service lines.
Yes.
Out of that, only 18 services are asset-based. The others are task-based, scheduled services. So there's so much of change. What's happening with the sustainability is another new requirement that is coming up. So
yes,
facility management to transform, it requires, of course, much more stronger. I encourage a lot more young engineers, MBAs and finance graduates to come to FM because they will help to improve the overall industry. And then
yes,
I need experienced people to coach them, to mentor them. Because the challenge we have, we get very bright people and we don't have very, very experienced people. Those who are prepared to take on the mantle of mentorship. You can't bring new youngsters into the industry without a proper mentoring program, without an entire ecosystem in both clients and service providers have to adopt them. And they have to adapt themselves to this change that is happening. I brought in about 500 young leaders in the last 5 years. I've brought in five, I'm telling you, 500 young graduates. And out of them, two-thirds of them are successful facility managers leading some of the finest projects in the region.
Very nice. Thank you very much. I think an amazing insight of leadership on action, and that is very important for us. The industry need mentoring. I agree 100%. Maybe we can launch a mentoring program in MIFMA, and we will seek leaders' support on that.
I'm prepared to take 10 to 15 graduates from MIFMA to in my company. If MEFMA wants to bring them as a part of a, you know, a, what we call it, incubation business, we can do an incubation, FM incubation with MEFMA on young leaders.
Amazing. Amazing, Mr. Tariq. We had more questions about performance management and SLA. I'm telling the guys, very soon we're going to have a workshop about SLA KPI because I think there is a misperception about SLA KPI in the industry. I promise you, we're going to have a special session.
Please ask them to go to my LinkedIn. About 7 years back, in a IFMA conference, I have presented a performance management presentation. It'll be very interesting for boys and girls to see that.
We might do another session about performance management with
sure,
you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
It's really an amazing session, Mr. Tariq. I just want to remind everybody before we close the session, if you can make it to our Confix, MEFMA Confix is going to happen in 14 and 15 of October in Riyadh. We have many events happening every week and every month. You go to MEFMA calendar, you see our webinars, we see our MEFMA leaders talk and many more. We are very passionate as an association to support the industry. We connect with leaders like Mr. Tariq, and we try to actually make them reachable to all the people in the industry, I think, through these kind of platforms. So please, if you can make it to our MIFMA Confix, go to our website and you can see more details about MIFMA Confix and our training. Very insightful interview. I'm learning actually from Leaders Talk myself. Thank you again, Tariq. Thank you.
And let me tell you, my privilege to be sitting with such an amazing icon of FM. Your passion for FM, the way you have pursued the impact of MEFMA over the last 14 years, I'm really amazed and very, very excited to work with you, Ali, because I really feel that a passion that you have definitely deserves it to move. I want this to go leaps and bounds. And I'm sure you're doing amazing.
We are trying. We have people like you in the industry also, Mr. Tariq. And I have to end this with your word, something impactful. And this is what we always, how can we make something impactful? You know, that is very important for all of us.
I think... the way to make something impactful is to self-reflect on what we have and make the most of it, rather than asking for change, transformation. The first important thing, there's a lot around us. We have significant inner strengths and we have given resources and we can definitely change things. And once we make that change, the transformation will automatically.
Yes. Thank you very much again. And see you very soon, Mr. Tariq. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you. Thank you all for you being here. And have a great, lovely day, evening, morning from all around the world. Thank you again. And have a great day. I'm ending the session.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tariq. Thank you very much.
Thank you, friend.
Thank you all.
أعزائنا عائلة نثمة، نتمنى أن تكونوا قد استمتعتم بلقاء اليوم. ترقبوا المزيد من اللقاءات الملهمة والمحفزة.